But what we are now witnessing, which is the interesting bit, is that recruitment to the United States Army is rock bottom. People are simply not wanting to join. Surprise, surprise. They don't want to go and fight in Iraq. And many of the soldiers who are in Iraq and have returned home are not going volunteering for a second tour of duty. And many people who join the National Guard in places like Vermont are suddenly being told that there's an emergency, we need you in Iraq. So all sorts of things are going on in the United States that are not reported, but there is great anger amongst the military families, many, many military families. And recently a Marine won a case for refusing to go back to Iraq. He actually won it in a U.S. court. So there are real possibilities even within that country. But from the military point of view, it's a total disaster for them. Because if the generals are saying, if you really want us to stabilize Iraq, give us 200,000 more soldiers and we'll do it for you. With the bombings and the... look, they're not totally wrong about that. If you kill enough people, you can stabilize a country temporarily. We know that. They did it in Japan, after all, by using nuclear weapons in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Broke the back of that country. And they could do it in Iraq as well. Of course, there'll be an outcry, one hopes, but they could do it. But for that, they need more troops after the bombings to stabilize. And there are no volunteers coming. There aren't enough mercenaries. I don't know whether you know this, but the largest force there is the U.S. Army. The second largest force is the British Army. The third largest force are mercenaries, sometimes referred to euphemistically in the international media as defense contractors. But that's what they are, mercenaries. And when I was in South Africa last winter, in November last year, news came through that one of these defense contractors was a white South African who had been killed in a clash with the resistance. And these people told me that this so-called defense contractor was one of the white military intelligence people who had participated in torturing Steve Biko to death inside South Africa. So this young Sowetan who was showing me around Soweto that day, he said, I'm glad, my brother, that there isn't a truth and reconciliation mission in Iraq just yet. That's what's going on. Lots of white South Africans are joining up. Lots of ex-British SAS people are joining up. But they still can't do it. They still can't do it. And so they have a military problem and they have a financial problem. So forget any question of invading Iran or Syria. That's pure bluff, in my opinion. They can't do it logistically. There'll be a rebellion at the ranks of the Pentagon if they say we need to take Syria. You can barely contain Iraq, and you're going to invade Syria, which has a much tougher army. It's a country not weakened by sanctions. It has more up-to-date equipment. The Russians have just sold them the most advanced anti-aircraft equipment that there exists on the globe, much to the annoyance of Washington. And they're going to go in and take that? It's impossible. They can't do it. Leave alone taking Iran. So this is saber-rattling and bluff to put pressure on these regimes, hoping they'll fall automatically. But that's not going to happen. So from that point of view, what is going on in Iraq is a blow for the United States. They haven't yet succeeded. I'm not saying they might not. They might. We have to be hard-headed. But so far, they have not got anywhere close to success inside Iraq. And they know it. They know it if you read between the lines, even in the American press. And the American military knows it better than most. That's situation number one in the Arab East. The second situation is Palestine, which is hardly ever discussed in polite circles. Why? Because the way the media is organized and the way the Israeli embassies have waged an offensive since they went and attacked Jenin and the occupied lands in Palestine, it scares people off. Good thinking people with good consciences are scared of discussing Palestine because Israel is involved. And yet the news which comes from Palestine every single day is news of acts of aggression and killings carried out by the Israeli Defense Force. Every single week you read about some young kid who's been killed in Palestine. And incidentally, the irony is that this is reported in a much sharper way in sections of the Israeli press than it is in the Western media. And I sometimes say to Western journalists, can't you just repeat, reprint in your wretched papers what Israeli journalists are writing, who are covering it? And they're saying, no, it's different for them. I said, no, it's not different for them. They take big risks. And one of these I just want to quote to you, which I put in the new introduction to Street Fighting Years, because I was so touched by this. Touched and angered and everything else. It's in September 2001, the month of 9/11. An Israeli journalist, Uri Blau, conducted a set of interviews with Israeli soldiers identified with pseudonyms. That's the condition on which they agreed to talk. Published in a Jerusalem weekly, Kol Ha'ir. This is just to give you an idea of what can be published. Uri Blau to the soldiers. What is the first thing that comes to mind when you hear the word territories? Roy, 19 paratroopers serving in Hebron for the past 6 months. The first thing that comes to my mind is children throwing Molotov cocktails. Basically, you should shoot them in the legs, and you don't. Tzvi, 20, serving in the Gaza Strip. My first memory is of security patrol. You see unbelievable things there. People sitting under bulldozers begging us not to demolish their houses. There's a guy who lives in a tent where his house stood once, and now this tent is on ground that has been annexed by the settlement. But there are stories much worse than this. Real pogroms. Angry settlers coming out with sticks and pitchforks and burning down houses. Just like that. Roy. In Hebron, there's basically a settler's mafia. No supervision. They can do anything they want. The police are terrified of them. When you go to arrest settlers in Hebron who've made a little pogrom, it's much more complicated than arresting an Arab fugitive. Little children throwing rocks at old Arab ladies. That's a common sight. And diapers, they throw their shit out of the windows. Blau. Do you feel that something has changed in you while serving in the territories? When you go back home, do you see things differently? Dubi, 21, Golani Infantry Brigade, served in Samaria, about to finish his tour of duty. You get to a point where you're just sick of it all. They fire at us, we get there, fire on whoever fired on us, hope it'll be over. You don't even know who supports whom, who collaborates and who doesn't. So you have to stand at the checkpoint and stop them all and make them wait for hours. Blau, how does being on checkpoint duty change your outlook on life? Erez, these checkpoints and the fact that you can treat people this way, all of this makes a guy more confident. I mean, in general, not me personally. I really don't like treating them that way, taking part in that game, as Yaron put it. Blau, did any of you ever shoot someone? Roy, when I first got to Hebron, I wouldn't open fire on little children. And I was sure if I killed or hurt anyone, I'd go so crazy that I'd leave the army. But finally, I did shoot someone and nothing happened to me. In Hebron, I shot the legs off of two kids, and I was sure I wouldn't be able to sleep anymore at night, but nothing happened to me. 2 weeks ago, I hurt a Palestinian policeman, and that didn't affect me either. You become so apathetic, you don't care at all. Shooting is the IDF soldier's way of meditating. Do you release stress when you shoot? Roy, we had a 5-day operation in the territories on firing grounds, and basically Bedouins are not allowed to be there. The officer stops the vehicle and says, "Who's ready?" I step out. Another guy steps out, and then about 300 yards from us, we see a poor Bedouin shepherd walking out on the grass at the firing ground. The officer says, "Okay, go ahead." We lie down, one bullet to the left of the herd, one bullet to the right of the herd. Blow. Why? Roy, because shooting live ammo has become so fluid, so trivial. You can live with having shot at an old man grazing his speech, just like that. Officially, you don't open fire just like that. On the ground, our guys would do it for the hell of it, as though they were returning fire. For them, shooting is simply a video game. Erez, if anyone to tell me you have to open fire on a 7-year-old girl, I'd shoot without hesitation. Blau, really? Erez, yes, because that's what you have to do, if that's what I'm ordered to do. Blau, don't you ever use your own judgment. Erez, I'll make my own judgment later. It is a crime, but listen, it depends on the actual case. 7-year-old girls are not shot at just like that. I don't believe that whoever shot a 7-year-old did it just like that. Blau, in the Givati Brigade, someone shot a 14-year-old boy just like that. And so on and so on and so on. Now, these voices are not reported in the Western media. What happens every single day in the occupied territories of Palestine is not reported in the Western media. The Western liberal conscience has become blind to Palestinian suffering. What the only things you're allowed to see is suicide bombers. When they go and blow up a cafe in an Israeli town and Israeli kids get killed, this is then big headlines, big stories, but totally decontextualized. You never know why these people are doing it, so they appear crazy. I mean, it's not a tactic I support, but you have to understand why people feel so desperate, that for them the difference between living and dying is not so great, that their everyday life has reached such a stage that they don't care any longer. And why has that happened? That's the question. That's the question no one asks. And there are two solutions in Palestine. One, a proper Palestinian state with contiguous territory, no interference, withdrawal by Israel to the 67 frontiers. That now looks impossible. All the Palestinians are being offered is shriveled little Bantustans. That's all. And they will never work. The other alternative is a single Israel-Palestine with equal rights for Jews and non-Jews in that state. That is something one could live with and support. If it happened in that way, the Zionist establishment says, no, we will not do it because the Palestinians breed faster than we do and could become a majority very rapidly. But what about all the Russians who came from Russia pretending to be Jews and aren't even real Jews? So no one knows who has the majority in Israel at all today.